Dave Wiggins. Dave is the CTO of Document Advantage Corporation, or DocuVantage. He leads the product design, development, and delivery of DocuVantage on-demand solutions. He is a 25-plus year industry veteran in analysis, design, development, and delivery expertise in electronic document, content, and records management, business process workflow automation, and compliance technologies and services.
Phew. That was a mouthful.
Really? You know what? Let's just let Dave tell you.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. Well, I want to thank the guys for giving me this two-hour time slot, because we've got 100 slides to get through. No. Just got a few slides. Wanted to talk a little bit about... Can you guys hear me? Do you need the mic, or can you hear me?
He needs to record
it. So there's the mic and the clicker.
Oh, making things complicated for Dave. So I was going to go through a few definitions real quick. I like to keep things pretty simple, so I was going to go through the layman's definition of all these cloud things that you've heard about, because it means different things to so many different people. So, the other right. I'm a left-hander, come on. So, service models, you've probably heard this all day long, but software as a service, it's usually an application, not a programming language. It's an application that is normally subscription-based. You just configure it and go. You don't have to do a lot to it. It's just out of the box, take off and run with it. It's usually running in a multi-tenant environment. So the vendor isn't setting up a server for every customer. They're running you in an environment that's a shared environment. It allows them to maximize their investment. It allows them to provide you with lower cost services because they can consolidate all their resources. So a couple of examples, Taleo, Google Apps, healthcare.gov, all of those are software as a service type applications. The platform as a service is a little more of a nebulous term. It's often a way for you to develop applications. So you can have a development environment, the vendor hosts that development environment, you actually have your program, your developers write your applications in their environment, they're providing all of the servers, everything. All you worry about is writing code, they host it, they manage it, they actually even provide the programming language for you. So you're in their environment. We do a little bit of that, but Salesforce, you guys have probably all heard of Salesforce.com. They're kind of a hybrid. They're software as a service, because you can run Salesforce right out of the box, but then they have that whole app exchange and their own development environment. So they morphed themselves over to a platform as a service. And the reason they did that was because they found that it's easier to maintain customers. I mean, CRM, just like what we do, document management, document management is document management, CRM is CRM. It's real easy to switch, but if you allow people to have much more control over what they're doing in your application, they want to stay with you because they've put a lot of effort into what they're doing. Infrastructure as a service, there's a couple of the guys here, IBM, Amazon, Google, there's quite a number of people, Dimension Data, that infrastructure is literally the data center, the servers, the databases, the operating system, all your intrusion detection, all of that stuff that takes to run these applications. You don't have to worry about it. Someone else does all of that. They have the data center. They provide you with the internet connectivity. They're taking care of, all the cooling, the power, everything. It's pretty much touch-free for you. Implementation is rapid. You need another server? Literally, click a button, seconds later, you have a new Windows server with SQL Server running on it. It's instantaneous. No more buying servers, waiting 2 weeks for them to show up, having your guys load all the software. I mean, I know techies like to do that kind of stuff, but it's not, you know, these days there's not a big value add in that. It's, you know, us propeller heads, we would rather, you know, get in there and play with things. But it's better for the organization if you don't have to do that. Let somebody else do that that does it all day long. And they have teams of people that do that all day long. They're experts in it. There's a fourth category that I added here. Not a lot of people think of it, but it's actually consulting as a service. And it's something that's probably really old, but also relatively new. Places like freelancer.com and Odesk, where literally you go on there and you post a job and somebody writes code. You never see them. You don't even have to know where they are. There's resume writing services. There's, you know, contract writing. So there's all kinds of services that's really just consulting, but it's a service delivered through the web. People you never meet. So a lot of people are in the software as a service and platform as a service are also sort of getting into the consulting as a service because they can deliver what they offer much better that way. Okay, so deployment models. You just heard all about this, so I'll keep this one pretty simple. But private cloud, it's all your stuff. I mean, you're responsible for it. It's a capital expense. You get to buy it. You get to maintain it. If it's down, it's your fault. And somebody's going to be yelling at you or your team. So all those service level agreements that you get from cloud vendors, you really should be implementing those internally. Most people don't think about that. They just say, well, our network guys take care of it, but they don't really make the network guys make sure that it's up and running 24/7. You know, the network guy goes home at 5. What happens at midnight when all the servers go down because the network's out? Or the power went off and the generator didn't start. And I know everybody goes, oh, that would never happen. Well, I guarantee it's happened to probably almost everybody in this room at some point in time, or something failed and nobody was around to fix it. So in the private cloud, that's all on your shoulders. In the public cloud, you're shifting that responsibility over to the provider. And again, you're dealing with people that's what they do 24/7. You know, they're not a small data center, or literally I have seen people with 10 servers in a closet where they keep the brooms and the mops. That's their data center. It's like, well, there's not even any air conditioning in there. And they're running financial apps on there. And then wondering, is it safe? Well, I change my password every month. Well, yeah, but somebody can walk in there and get your server and take it with them. In the public cloud, somebody else is taking care of that. You know, 99.9% of the public cloud is in a secure data center. You yourself probably can't even get into it. It's very controlled access, secure, and it's an operating expense. It's not a capital expense. So it's something that you're paying on a recurring basis. It comes out of your operating budget, typically. You don't have to buy it up front. You're paying for it over time. Sometimes that public cloud is shared infrastructure. So it may be virtual machines. It may be multi-tenant applications on virtual machines. Sometimes you get your own server or servers. It's all up to what you need as an organization. And a hybrid is literally a combination of the both. A lot of people will run their own data center, but they will back up to an offsite location. So that's a hybrid. You're running your own data, but you back up to another data center. Or you've got a certain number of servers. You got 50 servers in your data center. A big project comes up. You need to double that. Do you want to go buy 50 servers? Or do you want to go online and click a few buttons and have 50 servers up and running that afternoon? So it gives you a very rapid way to expand and contract. You're not locked in. You're not into, you know, hardware these days. It lasts a long time, but usually about every 3 years, you're replacing servers. every few months you're patching the OS, especially, you know, the way things are today with the viruses. It doesn't matter if you're running Windows or Linux or Unix, there's a patch. There's always a patch that you haven't applied. And it's constant. And so you've got to have somebody that knows how to do all of that. And your guy that only does IT 4 hours a week, it's hard for him to keep up with it. It's hard for him to keep up with what's important. So on the architecture side, it's where it gets a little more complicated. So the majority of cloud applications are client-server architecture. So there's a client application, and there's a server application that's running in a data center somewhere. There are a few that are peer-to-peer. There's nothing wrong with peer-to-peer. People have made peer-to-peer out to be this bad thing. You know, they think Napster. Peer-to-peer isn't bad. It's just a different architecture. It's what people have done with it that's bad. The architecture itself is not bad. It's just what people, the most notable instances of it are what people get frustrated with. So you're looking at things like, are we running it on the iPad or Android? You know, so do we need mobile access? Do we need Mac access, Windows access? Each of those choices oftentimes means another code base. So it seems easy, you know, oh, I've got this Facebook. It's a browser-based application. It's real easy. But then everybody starts carrying their phones around with them. And you know you cannot live without Facebook. So Facebook writes a mobile app. Well, now they've got one that's on iOS and one that's on Android. That's now three code bases. You can't keep them in sync. It's almost impossible. It's three different technologies written three different ways, but everybody wants the same functionality. So it makes it more challenging for, you know, the software provider. The more platforms you try to run on, the more challenging it is. And the more code you write, I'm a programmer. The more code you write, the more chance you have of introducing bugs. And bugs can be, you know, security leaks. It can be, you know, clicking something and an ugly red screen shows up, or the blue screen of death that everybody is probably familiar with. You can write those in all of those platforms. The more you have, the more chances you get of generating those, because you've got different people. You don't have the same programmer writing your iOS app as you do your browser app. So the architecture can be very important. You know, how do you need to deploy this? Are you a Windows shop? You have all Windows desktops, or do you have a marketing department that refuses Windows and they will only use Mac? So you have to look at that when you're deploying something. You know, do your Mac people need access to medical records, or do they just need the marketing stuff? So when you're choosing that platform, you've got to look at where the users are. Do you want people running around the hospital with their iPad on the wireless pulling up medical records? There's nothing to say that that's wrong. It's just you got to look at how that vendor's implemented it before you make that choice. The data center architecture, you know, that gets into, you know, what kind of servers do you want? Do you prefer Windows servers? Do you prefer Linux or Unix? You know, they each have their pluses and minuses. And a lot of times when you're in the cloud environment, you don't have to worry about what is sitting back in that data center, unless you've written something specifically for, say, Microsoft SQL Server. Well, you're not going to have a Linux server running SQL Server. So that'll dictate what back-end server you have. But if it's something that talks through an intermediary, you can write code that will talk to any database. So you can sort of remove the server and database from the equation and allow your team to choose which one they're best at managing. The other part of that architecture is the connectivity. How does these applications communicate? Most nowadays, it's TCP/IP. Even when you're looking at the mobile stuff, they're talking TCP/IP over the wireless signals. and it sort of pushes into, you know, at least a two-tier application. Do you need public internet access to this application that you've deployed? So some organizations, you know, some of our customers have people around the world. They don't want to set up virtual LANs to 50 countries. So they want a secure web-based application that they don't have to worry about. They don't want to have to put holes in their firewall to let people from the outside in. So start looking at the connectivity. The data center connectivity, you know, there's virtual LANs inside of the data center. If you're running your own cloud, what's that connectivity look like? Is it a cloud deployment in your office space, or is it in a data center that you're accessing? And do you need a virtual LAN that connects you to that, or is it okay to do a private network? So those are some of the things to think about. So which one should you use? Great answer. It depends. What are you trying to do? I think if you're trying to do real-time, you know, access to medical imaging, do you want to set up the network infrastructure, the internet infrastructure, to pull MRI images from a data center in Texas? You can do it. It might cost a lot of money to get, you know, gigabit internet connectivity at both ends to be able to feed those images at the speed you need. So you have to look at what am I trying to accomplish? Because there's not one right answer. It really does depend on what you're trying to do. If you're looking at patient records, you know, that one's could be private, could be public. It depends on how you're managing those records. Accounts payable, you know, they're small documents. They're easy to transfer across the internet. Policies and procedures, all those things. You know, the biggest one is the you know, the large files. If you're, you know, if you have someone designing your new medical facility and you've got plan sets, you know, those files are huge. They're, you know, some of those files are a gigabyte. Do you want to try to pull a gigabyte file across the internet? Has anybody ever tried that? It's not fun. You can wait 20 minutes. I mean, 20-something years ago, I did a project with Apple, and they were passing their Mac design drawings across the internet through satellites. And they were like, wow, it's really slow. I'm like, no kidding. It's, you know, you're passing 20 megabyte files across satellite connections, not even, you know, not even fiber, just satellite connections. So the right choice is what fits the application you're trying to solve. So, all right, the brief 30-second commercial about us. We're 100% cloud-based, software as a service, starting to get into platform as a service. So we're allowing people to extend what they do in our software for, they can do programming and extend its capabilities. It's all about business process automation. So we, in the healthcare world, we focus on what I call the back office. Yeah. We have customers that store patient records and things, but most of our focus is on the back office. Accounts payable, customers that are doing Medicaid reporting, so they have like hundreds of reports they have to deliver to the state government every month. They can't keep track of them. So we have, our whole thing is about workflow and document flow. It's easy to implement, it's fast. They don't have to spend a lot of time, you know, configuring software, but it's flexible enough they can bend it around their organization instead of saying, hey, how do I do accounts payable? It's more like, this is how we do accounts payable, let's set it up that way. And then one of the things that we're different is we actually provide consulting services. We don't just throw the software at a customer, because it's a different approach. It's very structured. It's not, you know, something like you guys have all heard of Dropbox and Box.net. Those are called document management systems, but they're more like folders in the cloud. You don't need training to use that. But we're more of a highly structured application, so we provide the consulting services to help you rethink your business processes and automate them. So That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.